With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
We are the New York Knicks.
I'm back. Back in the New York.
Ooh, well, it's the Knicks.
New York.
We are the New York Knicks.
New York.
But this new season we're about to enter. The Knicks taking no shorts. It's like winter.
New York. New York.
New York be about the Knicks, huh?
But the best thing about New York City is
K-N-I-C-K-S.
Everybody say go New York, go New York, go!
Go New York, go New York, go!
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 578 of the New York Knicks podcast, part of Dash Radio. We did a crossover episode today with the Knicks recap. Troy was an amazing host, and so we're using his audio. And we're going to go to that right now. We will get to all your emails and questions next episode. We're going to be doing them more regularly again, starting now. So, yeah, enjoy. And everyone, listen to the Knicks recap with Troy. He's fantastic.
And welcome to another episode of the Knicks recap, your source for all New York Knicks related content. I'm your host, Troy. And joining me today from one of the longest running Knicks podcasts to date, over 10 years, we were just talking about this, over 10 years, a decade of content from the New York Knicks podcast. Welcome, Mark and Jay. Thanks, guys, for coming. How's it going, man?
Good, good. Thanks for having us. We're excited to be here. We are excited to talk some Knicks. We've taken a little bit of hiatus on our show for the summer, so we will nice to do the collab and talk about Jalen Brunson, talk about the Donovan Mitchell news, talk about, well, not news, the almost news. But anyway, I got it. So we've been doing this show for a long time. I'm not even, just a really long time. And I think this is the first time we've done over a decade that we've done the show that we have an actual legit point guard we can all be excited about. It.
You know, I have to agree. I absolutely have to agree.
Yeah. I mean, since we've done, so we started doing this show when Amari joined and we had good Felton. We had bad slash fat Felton. We've had had 13 games of Jeremy Lin's sanity. We had, what else we have at point guard? We've had some embarrassing moments at point guard.
Who was that guy named EP? What's his name again?
Something. We got Elfrid Payton.
Oh, that guy,
and
yeah.
And he wasn't even, there's so many bad point guards we've had along the way. And so many guys we've tried to force into the role, like Frank Ntilikina, even though some people still think he's in going to the Hall of Fame. But it's nice to have one guy who we can all agree we're excited about. We think he's going to be, I don't know if he'll be an all-star, but we can all agree he should be at the very least an above average point guard for us. And above average at the point guard position is like us running a 4-minute mile. It's almost impossible for the Knicks. We've achieved it. So I'm excited about that.
It's a crazy situation right now because recently, and we're gonna get to the point guard situation, but they just dropped the preseason basketball schedule. I don't know if you guys checked that out, but I want to get your thoughts on that. So they released a couple of games scheduled right now. It's from October 4th to October 14th. Yeah. Right now, the Knicks are scheduled to face Detroit at MSG, which is the first time we'll actually get a chance to take a look at Jaden Ivey, the guard that was not to be for the Knicks. So that's going to be something to look at. They got Indy at MSG again on October 7th. And then we take a little bit of a break. And then on October 12th, we go back to Indy and we play them at Indiana. And then our final game for the preseason is against the Wizards. at MSG. Jay, what's your thoughts on this? And, you know, what do you think about the preseason schedule?
Well, I think they're having back-to-back games against Halliburton just to make me lose my mind before the season even starts. Everyone who listens to our show knows that I am super, super bitter we didn't draft him. So we have that. I am curious to see Ivy. I'm not going to be as bitter about that because that I think that was a really – the Knicks talked themselves into that rumor. I don't think that was actually like a legit Knicks are close to getting Ivy thing. I think Knicks Twitter did that to themselves. So more curious to see how he looks, but not – this is not going to be as bitter as the Indiana experience. And Wizards, maybe we'll get a win.
I was going to say, we might finish the preseason 4-0. I mean, we kind of have like the – this is not a murderer's row for preseason. This is like almost like the minor leagues of preseason.
Yeah.
These are the only other teams in our conference where we're sure like we're probably better than these teams.
Agreed.
I would agree with that. I think you could potentially go 4-0 here. I don't see anything too disastrous. I mean, the Wizards with Beal maybe, but is Beal even going to play that many minutes? I mean, if it's preseason we're talking about here, I can't really see us. We should beat all these teams, to your point.
Yeah, I mean, the Wizards have Porzingis, and I have a feeling he'll be in midseason form, meaning he probably won't play the game. But but realistically, obviously, it doesn't matter that much if we win preseason games. But it's a good like schedule to start off with, in the sense of like it's not like I'd rather not play the I'd rather not have a preseason schedule. We're playing like the Celtics and the just like or the Golden State Warriors. I'd rather not play the best. I'd rather play. Work our way up, basically.
You want to get your feet wet, basically.
Yeah. We get our feet wet. Where do you think we are right now as far as the conference? Because I was looking at something. Someone posted a thing of like the rankings of all the teams. Right. The Knicks were pretty low in the rankings, according to this. Whatever. And Knicks never get a lot of respect. But ever. in their conference, where are they sitting right now? Where do you think they are? Are they a top four team? Top eight team? Where does this team look? We make no other moves going into the season. Where are we?
They're definitely better where they are now, but the East is definitely better too. It's stacked now. I mean, teams got better. I think you could make the argument that Boston got a little bit better, adding Brogdon. If Brogdon ever plays, but if he does play, they'll be better because of him.
They got Gallo also.
Right, exactly, and that's under the radar signing. Very good signing as well. They really got better without losing too many pieces. So Boston should be a force again, I think. With that being said, where the Knicks could be, I see them really at around play-in position, maybe around 8 seed. Just because of how stacked the East is right now. Now, could they jump into 6th? Absolutely. I mean, they did that during their playoff year. Nobody thought they were going to get to 6th, and they kind of, you know, exceeded expectations and passed 6th. But I think that's kind of there for them now, but the East is so stacked. I mean, it's going to be a struggle, I think. What about you guys?
I think you're totally right. I think they're better than last season. Definitely. More things should go right. I mean, Julius Randle being the biggest question mark, but overall the Knicks should be a better team, but who knows with this East. Like all the teams I mentioned, even like the Wizards, are the Knicks better than the Wizards? Probably. Are the Knicks better than Detroit? Almost definitely. Are the Knicks better than Indiana? Yes. Knicks been in Orlando, yes. Everyone else, though, is a bit of a question mark. Jay, what do you think?
I think 6-10 is fair. I can't see them breaking into the top 5, but I think they would need a catastrophic rash of injuries to fall out of the top 10 as well. So, I mean, I think at least the play-in is in their future for the season, and hopefully they could jump into that 6-7 spot and not even have to deal with that tournament.
Okay, so basketball gods, Jay has asked for a catastrophic range of injuries for other teams, not our team, other teams. Just want to be clear.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Jay, I'm praying with you, man. I think 6-10 is absolutely fair. Like I said, I think they could definitely buy for the 8th spot. I think that's where the sweet spot is. They can definitely exceed that, but I think that's where their sweet spot's going to be. And what a way to start off the season. If you guys didn't see a couple of hours ago, they dropped the full season schedule for the Knicks. And opening night, number 2 pick, number 3 pick. Fire game upcoming with RJ Barrett leading the Knicks and Ja Morant leading the Grizzlies on October 19th, opening night. It should be a great matchup. We're on the road, though, against Memphis. So that's going to be – it's definitely a tough one to open the start of the season, but it's a good challenge. And I think R.J. Barrett needs to step up, and this has to be a showcase game for him, a statement game, and I think that's what he's going to make it. Jay, what do you think about this opening night game, and what do you expect from certain Knicks players on this night?
I think it's going to be a fun one. Definitely, I expect Randall to come out. He's definitely heard the chatter.
He's heard your chatter. He's definitely heard your chatter, I'm sure.
It seems like Randall, the expectations are so low, but I think that's made the chip on his shoulder. You showed a workout video or some signs of him from working out. He looks like he's in really good shape.
Yeah.
I think he's going to come out and have a really great start to the season. Is that what you're saying, Jay?
Yeah. I mean, if he doesn't have a great start to this season, I don't see him ever doing it because there's motivation. He looks in shape. He's got a real point guard. Everything is set up for him right now. And I don't see a better situation starting a season than he's got right now. He's also got a competition for his role. So, who is to say Obi doesn't take his spot if he starts screwing around like he did last season? So I think there's motivation everywhere you look for him.
I mean, there's a couple scenarios with Randall right now. I mean, I don't think he's going to be traded before the season. If he starts the season really well, his trade value goes up. Knicks could move him, but they also, there's a decent chance if he plays well, they'll be suckered into keeping him also.
I think that's what happened during his All-Star year, right? We didn't really know what we were going to give him or what to expect from that year. He played himself into that contract. We gave him that contract, and then he fell back to reality the next year in averages for everything. Now, something that's really not talked about with Julius, and you guys mentioned the workout video. I was talking to Jay about this before you got on the call, Mark, and it's funny. He's skinnier.
Yeah.
He's slimmer, right?
Yeah, he looks skinnier. That's what the All-Star season, the big thing is he came to camp looking kind of skinny.
Right.
Same idea. Yeah.
But now he has the muscle is still there. He's still jacked. He's ripped, but he's skinnier. He looks faster. His shot looks, for what it's worth, and it's a pro-am. I get it. It's a workout. Still looked good, right? His shot still looked good. But my thing was, Obi is already developing. You saw it last season. I think he's already making the case that he has to start now, or at least get more minutes. He has to get more minutes, definitely. So how do you give him more minutes while also putting in Randall, who you gave that big contract to, who you know in some form or fashion is really your best player, your second to best player on the team right now, right? With Brunson, I don't even know where that is now.
It's a really confusing situation because in theory, you should have moved on from Randall. It's hard to open up playing time for Obi because Obi and Randall are not the most, you can't play them at multiple positions. You could try to play Obi and Randall together. You really are going to suffer defensively, but maybe you could try it anyway. I don't know. But this, you also have Brunson, his defense is not amazing. Your team is, you have a coach that's a really great defensive coach, but you're not giving him a lot of elements to have a really good defensive team. Plus you just also, I don't know. It's a really tough thing to play a bunch of guys out there who aren't great defenders.
So I was actually thinking about this lineup. I mentioned this to Jay, and he actually, I'm not going to even give it away.
Are you going to put Obi at the three? Because I'm going to say that's absurd.
I'm going to switch it, but it's not too far off what I'm going to say.
If you're going to put Obi at the one and take and Brunson's minutes, you know what? I can see where you're going.
So here's the potential lineup that I have. And this is not going to start. I'm just saying this could be for stretches. And it's going to be matchup, dependent, right? But I would think during the course of next season, based on what I'm seeing from Randall, you're going to see stretches of this lineup. Jalen Brunson, RJ Barrett, Julius Randall at the three, Obi Toppin at the four, and Mitch at the five. You're right. Defensively, you can't play Obi and Randall together because you don't have a defensive anchor to absorb rebounds, to absorb, having a defensive presence in the paint. If you add Mitch to that scenario, you might be able to give yourself that defense that you lose.
So you want your three to be able to stay in front of guys, tear the other guy's wing. I don't think Randall's the guy that's going to stay in front of wings. I have more faith in Randall playing the five than the three. And I actually think if you're going to put the four and the five out there, I mean, you can see how it works, but I would put Obi at the four and Randall at the five. I think Randall could be a small ball center. He's super strong. He's a huge guy. He can rebound. He can fight down low. He's got that skill set to be a small ball five. And like the Knicks can go for a small lineup and have him at the five, and that would work out. Just like depending on the matchup. I mean, like, can Randall not do what Draymond Green does?
Well, I think he can, but here's the thing.
Not the same player, obviously. I'm just saying Randall could be like, he's got the same size as Draymond Green at the very least.
The reason I mention is because when we play some of the best fours, think of the best threes, right? Right now, KD, Jason Tatum, right? RJ does guard Tatum to an extent, right? But for the most part, they switch and Julius is on KD a lot. Julius is on Tatum a lot. So even though he doesn't play the three, he guards these threes. And I think the speed aspect, to your point, he can't make people stay in front of him. But during his all-star campaign, right? Because with your wings, what you need them to do, to your point, is stay in front of defenders and be able to take contact, defend, willingly defend. But you also have to have a three. You have to shoot. You have to be able to shoot too, right?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, what Boston does and the Golden State do so well that makes their defense so great is they're both very switchable teams. Most guys on the floor can guard every position to some extent. And really, that was, if we talk about all-time great Knicks coaches, at the time we did not appreciate what Woodson was trying to do, but Woodson was trying to make everyone switch. And at the time we kind of laughed about it, but it is really where the NBA has gone. Actually, Woodson was like, had everyone shoot a ton of threes and had the Knicks switching all the time. That's where the NBA won. He saw that, but you have to have the talent to do that. And so I understand what you're saying, maybe even with Randall switching. The issue with here you have is Mitch can't switch on. For whatever reason, Mitch can no longer guard the perimeter. So he's a little more limited with switching. And Obi is just not athletic enough to switch on most guys either. His defense, he's a very limited defender, and that's going to be an issue also. I think you're going to have a center that can't cover the perimeter and then have two other guys who are going to be a little more limited in what positions they can cover. Plus your guards here, RJ is fine. He's still probably a below average defender. And Brunson at the best is also going to be a slightly below average. That's going to be a really tough lineup to compete with. If you're going to have those guys out there, you need a Grimes. You need someone else out there who can really play. Like Grimes, you need someone else who can play defense out there to make up someone. You can't just have the center who's going to obviously help in the paint. You need someone else out there.
Jay, what do you think about the potential lineup that I just threw out there?
I think it could work in short bursts. Maybe give Obi an extra 3 to 5 minutes each half. That lineup is going to be really good offensively. So
maybe. Because also you have, obviously, Mitch does not shoot from the outside. Hopefully in this offseason when his foot is not broken and he's got the money, he probably work on shooting from 5 feet away from the basket. And don't forget, Hardenstein might be actually a better fit with that lineup because he's a better passer than Mitch. If you're going to try to make it a little more room on the lineup, maybe having Hardenstein out there who's a better passer would space the floor a little bit better. If you're going to
also defend the perimeter too.
Yeah, and he's going to switch out to the perimeter a little better. Maybe that would be better spacing. But the other issue I have is I know Obi shot for over like an 8-game span or 10-game span. He looked pretty good from three. Most of the season last year, he was terrible from three.
Yeah,
I want him to keep shooting from three, but we really don't know how good of a three-point shooter he is yet. And I know people like, it's weird in Knicks world where Obi over 10 games shoots well from three, and we're like, he's a good three-point shooter. Don't even question this, where we just saw Randall shoot 40% from three for an entire season and then suck the following season from three.
Right.
So I the question really I have is Randall and Obi, are they going to stretch the floor that like the spacing is going to be kind of, I'd rather just have Randall and Obi at the four and the five than try to work Mitch in that lineup. Also,
I think the only way this lineup works is if Randall accepts not only the defensive, whoever he's defending that particular night, the defensive matchup, he's going to have to accept it. The problem with Randall is we saw it last season. He's running up the court last because he's either arguing with the ref behind or he's talking to one of his teammates or blaming them for something that it was either his fault or he just can't take the blame for something. So obviously, if he continues with those type of behaviors, not only will the Knicks fans clamor for him to be traded further, but no lineup with Randall will work. Because how do you, you go ahead.
Yeah, I was like, how do you think the offense is going to work with Randle? I mean, my big question here is there's so many situations where either Randle dribbles the ball up or someone else dribbles up, like the whoever they're playing, pretending is point guard. And yeah. then Randle calls for the ball by the 3-point line, almost at the half court. He's like posting up half court. He's like, give me the ball. He doesn't even try to position near the basket. Now we have a real point guard. And we were hoping with Kemba, like he would try to get in better position to get the ball. Is Kemba going to, are we going to see Randle cutting? Is Randle going to post up down low? What's he going to do? Like the ball, he's not going to be the focal point of the offense anymore, running the offense. How is that actually going to work?
Gee, I'll give that one over to you.
It's just like you said, he's going to have to buy into the defense. He's going to have to buy into the offense too. We have a point guard now. We don't need point Randle. Not only do we don't need point Randle, we can't have point Randle. Everyone figured that out.
We never needed point Randle.
We never needed
never.
It was helpful, I guess, in the when Elfrid Payton's your point guard, well, we might as well try a point Randle. It was helpful in that season when they 2 years ago, it did make some sense. I think if Randle is averaging 5 or 6 assists a game, I think that's almost going to be a negative because like something else is going wrong here. Cause then he's kind of trying to be the focal point. Like I obviously want him to get assists and I wonder if it's going to be too, like if he's getting 6 assists a game, is the offense almost running too much around him?
Well, if he's getting 5 or 6, then Brunson better be averaging 10 to 12.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. You're right. Exactly. If any reason he's averaging more assists than Brunson, something's gone terribly wrong.
Randle's output has to be the one that misses here. He has to be the one that's affected. You're not taking away shots from RJ, who's ascending right now. You just signed Brunson as a point guard. You have to allow him to be a point guard. So he has to walk the ball up. He has to dictate offense. He has to dictate pace. That's what you paid him the money for. And Brunson's good at it, right? But if pro-ams are anything to see, you did see Julius still walk the ball up, even when he was playing with Brunson. So, again, it's pro-ams. It's a workout. So I don't want to take too much from it. But I mean, he did walk the ball up quite a bit. And that's a habit, right? If he does it during work.
So brutal. There's a game near the end of the season, and I forget who they were playing. I think Wally made this comment. But Randle ran back on offense, and he got an easy layup, basically, because he ran. Like, he was like whoever was playing point guard, passed it to Randle. Randle beat the defense down there and scored. And Wally's like, yeah, if Randle basically ran more, he'd get a lot more easy baskets. and which is a total, obviously, that's an obvious true statement, and Randle does not run. But what's so much fun about Obi is he runs the floor in every goddamn play. Is there a chance we could convince Randle to run the floor? Because this offense would look so much, like, all the other guys are ready to run. RJ's ready to run. Brunson will run. Everyone will run. Can we get Randle to run?
Jay, can we get him to run?
If everybody else is running, it's going to stand out real quick if he's jogging up and 4 other guys are all the way down by the free throw line already.
In some way, Tibbs should just be like, hey, Randle, we're going to put you out there for 30 minutes. Instead of your 37, 38 minutes, I want you running the whole time. And we're going to have over the other minutes, we're going to be a running offense. That would be really exciting.
I think that's why he cut the weight, though. I think that's why he's the slimmest he's been in his career right now. I think it's because he understands that this Knicks team is a young team. And if they want to compete in the East, a loaded, stacked East, they're going to have to run. And they know for a fact with Obi, they saw it last season. He's a one-man fast break. He is your fast break. As long as you can push it, he's going to be there in the open court, ready to do it. And you're right. If Randle can adopt that same behavior and you have 2 slashers on the team, you just opened up an entire different offense. Now you have 2 people cutting underneath, cutting to baseline. You have people and if Randle can even capture some of the 3-point magic that he found during his All-Star campaign, this is a different Knicks team than last year. Absolutely.
I mean, the number one offensive strategy in the NBA is not 3-point shooting. It's not pick and roll. The number one offensive strategy is attacking the defense when they're not ready. That's the most effective way to score. Fast breaks, getting the defense when they cannot set. If they don't have a set defense, you're going to be in a much better position to score. The Knicks have had the slowest pace in the NBA, or like bottom 3.
Yeah.
Last year, the year before. it's brutal. I know Tibbs is not an offensive like guru as far but like I think they have to give switch to a faster pace. And I think if they would just you just remove Randall, the pace would be a lot faster.
Yeah.
Well, Randall and Mitch both put on a ton of muscle weight last season and they both looked really slow. Maybe they learned from that and they realized they overdid it. And now that they cut some weight and they'll both be faster this season.
Well, Mitch had the issue also. He had a broken foot most of the offseason. So he couldn't, all he could do was like lift weights. He couldn't really run.
Yeah.
Which probably held back his like, that's why he kind of sucked at the beginning of the season because he had all this extra weight, which wasn't that helpful. And he wasn't running all this offseason. Like he wasn't really in game shape to begin the season.
Randall didn't have that excuse, but he did the same thing.
I mean, Randall's, if you want to give him an excuse,
good point.
He had a second kid right before the season. We have no idea what, like you could have kids. Like I'm not saying he had marital issues. I'm saying like kids could just be tough. You have a baby that doesn't sleep. Randall seems like he's a very hands-on father. That can be pretty brutal. That can be very stressful. Maybe that contributed to his hard off season, his hard starts to the season. I don't know, but giving him the benefit of the doubt. He had a chip on his shoulder, came out, was great. Last year, he didn't have a chip on his shoulder, played terrible. Maybe he just needs a really big chip on his shoulder every season.
So here's the big question then. Nick's Twitter kind of threw these questions at me, but really here, and I thought about it too, because it's a good question. Can he find redemption with the Knicks team and really the Knicks faithful, really? I don't think it's really the team that he needs to find redemption with. It's the fans.
The Knicks are a fair weather. I mean, not they're fair. They're hardcore Knicks. All the fans are hardcore, but we're also fair weather as far as like how you're playing for us. If you look, I mean, there's some people that will root for Frank Ntilikina no matter what he does in the court, but most fans, like if you start playing well, it's a redemption story. If Randall just starts putting up numbers, plays well, there'll be a small segment. They'll be like, oh, he still sucks. But the crowd will scream MVP. Like, we'll be, whatever you do, we're happy for.
Yeah, the Knicks were hard on him because he looked like he was slacking. He was jogging down the court. He was giving thumbs down. He was screaming at his teammates. He was pushing trainers, coaches. So, like, he was doing all this stuff, and that's why the crowd turned on him. If he turns around and he starts averaging 20 and 10 and he's got efficient numbers and he looks like he's hustling the whole time, crowd's going to love him again.
Yeah,
I absolutely agree. I think Randall is he definitely didn't do himself any favors, but if he plays to what the Knicks fans expect from him, if he gave us a little bit more of that all-star campaign Randall, a little bit, and he just came in with that mentality of locking in and just being focused and ready to go every single night, Knicks fans would adore him again, I think. I don't think that's any question, because it's like you said, we're passionate, but we're also logical when it comes to that, right? We care about what we see. And if we see you're not trying, we're allergic to the people who don't work hard more than anything else. And if you think that's the case, that's what happens.
For terrible players, as long as they look like they're trying.
Right.
Knicks fans.
That's 10 years example. Like the Knicks will love you even if you see. I mean, Lance Thomas, people loved him. He was not a good player. Like, it's as long as you try, the Knicks fans are going to love you.
The Knicks fans loved Ron Baker, who may not start in the WNBA. Knicks fans were all because he just tried really hard.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. If you show effort, obviously there has to be some results. But if you're really putting in the work, people will root for you. So alternatively, Randall is the same exact Randall from last year, where he can get 20 on 30% shooting. He argues calls. He looks grumpy out there. Doesn't look like he Obi falls down. Randall steps over him instead of like helping him up. He's the same Randall. What happens though? Like what happens? We're a month into the season. Randall looks like the exact same guy from last year. What happens? And Obi looks exciting. When Obi's on the court, we're like, oh, he looks awesome. What do the Knicks do?
If that happens again, the finger I'm pointing is at Coach Thibodeau.
Well, forget who you're pointing the finger at. Let's just say, and we can talk about that after.
Yeah.
What action do you take? Not blaming people. Randall is just the same guy from last year. He's super inefficient. He's not hitting his threes. He's whining. He's just been the same guy from last year, a month into the season. Do you send him home? Do you attach a pick to move him? What the hell do you do? Do you hope it just gets better?
I think it's a little bit of that too. I think that you try to play through it. I think that's what Thibs is going to definitely do. That's why I think it's coach dependent. Because to your question, I think that's what happens with Randle. It's all dependent on who's the one in charge in that situation. Because if you hold Randle accountable like you would any other player, right? Because if take Randle out of it, right? If it's another player, like Quickly's in the game and he does that, is he getting pulled?
Yeah.
Most likely, right?
100%.
So I'm going to take the counter. You want to blame Thibs. I will take Thibs' side here. You're going to argue Thibs should hold him accountable and then everything will work out. And Thibs might say, hey, Randle, I don't care if he's a high paid NBA player. He shouldn't be fragile. He's clearly fragile. And I already see a guy who's a bit broken. If I start holding him accountable the way you're saying, basically benching him, he might be a lost cause. I know for this team to win, if he's on the roster, he's got to be playing the way he was 2 years ago or somewhere near there. I have to find a way to get the best out of him. And while things that I would do for Quickly are different than I do for Randle, they are also just different players. And you can't assume everyone's going to be work. Like, I think this would work better for Randle. I think if you just keep pulling from games, we're going to just lose Randle. And that will be even worse.
But you could also risk losing the team as well, because if you treat everybody the same on the team, right? Other than Randle, because maybe Randle is a little bit more sensitive these days, right? Maybe he does have a little bit more of a fragile type of personality. So maybe you can't do the same things that you want to do with him with other people. But then if you're talking about motivation for the team, right? When you go into training camp and Thibs says all spots are open, you know, does he mean all spots expect power forward? So Well, I'm talking about that's normally the message. Like last year when he was talking about in the camp and he asked who was going to start, right? The normal response he gives, whether or not he knows the answer or not, the response he gives is like, you know, we're going to see, they're going to compete and, you know, we're going to go based off of who I think is, you know, best, right? And maybe sometimes to ourselves we can say, yeah, you can do that, but we know Randle's going to start, right? We know this person's going to start. We know that person's going to start. We can have those discussions. But if the message that you're giving in the locker room is, If your work ethic and your competition level and your team effort, and you make that the most every single day, and that's what's going to get you more minutes. If that's the message you throw out to the locker room, and then when it comes to Randle, you veer from that, I think personally you might risk losing other players while trying to help Randle.
I think it's a tough situation because I think also you may say like, well, you need to bench him. Then you'd be like, then if I'm Thibs, I'm like, that's above my pay grade. Like, I'm the coach of the team, but if you're talking about benching the guy that makes $25 million a year, that's the team president. The team president wanted him here. He made no real effort to move him. I have to figure out how to make it work with Randle. And if I think that, like, I have to keep giving him minutes because that's the only way to make it work, if Rose wants to step in and move him or tell him to go home, that's fine. But I can't just, like, I can't break what's left of his spirit.
Jay, what do you think about this? It's a little bit of a difference here. What do you think? How would you treat Randle if he came into the season doing some of the similar things he was doing last season?
Yeah, this is a really, really tough situation because I agree. If he's doing this stuff, I think he's probably a little mentally fragile. And you do put the risk of losing him completely. On the other hand, if he's doing that, you're also not going to win. So what do you do? I think you call 29 GMs and you see what offers are out there and you take the best one. Because if he's acting like that for a second year in a row, I don't see it getting any better.
Yeah, but then the question is value, right? Because the value system is broken. We're going to get into that in a little bit, but really the value system right now is broken. And
I think if he's going to look bad, then it's really going to be hard to get Danny Ainge to give us both a pick and Donovan Mitchell for him.
I mean, you're definitely
two picks. Come on.
Ainge. Did you know Randle used to be an all-star? Come on. We want two picks and Donovan Mitchell.
That's really fair.
End up being the Knicks give a pick and basically do a salary dump, which is going to be terrible. But on the other hand, you can't throw away the whole season, which is what you're doing if you have a toxic player on your team dragging out.
So you think he gets moved then? You think he gets moved if the behavior from last season continues into this season?
Right before the trade deadline, like 45 games into the season. If he's still doing that, then yes. But I think they do give it like a full 40 games before they start panicking.
I agree with that too. I think they make it. I think they give it that old college try for 40 games, and if it works, they'll continue with them. And if it doesn't, they'll do their best to find the deal. But I think they did that this offseason, really couldn't find anything. And if his value is going to be the same as it was this offseason, you're going to have the same deals, maybe even less deals on the table. So if you do move him, what do you move him for? Because they always want to try to match value. But again, what is even value now today? You don't even know, right?
So the Knicks had to attach a first-round pick, and I think there was 47 seconds attached to move Kemba Walker's $9 million one-year deal. How do you get rid of $120 million?
How many second-round picks does he have left? 90 or?
I don't know. It just seems like they attached a lot of picks to get rid of Kemba. I was more making a joke, not commenting on that trade. I think at the best case, then you convince another team that Randall will come off the bench for us because of the situation here, but he would come off the bench for you in a different situation. He'd be more open to doing that, and we'll give you a first round pick, and you can figure out how to. Randall off the bench could be a great fit. It's just the question is, if Randall starts playing poorly, is there any way you could talk him out of like going from like New York MVP to guy off the bench for the Knicks?
So your strategy is to just lie to the other GMs.
Well, I mean, like you can involve him in the conversation and just say
just make
some
up.
Guys need change of scenery. Maybe he'll just say like, I can't, I'm just by pride. I can't come to the Knicks and go off the bench after being the starter here. But if you trade me to a good team, you trade me to the Celtics or I don't know, just the Heat say on the Heat, I know they have a really good team. I have to prove myself on the Heat. And I'm more open to coming off the bench there because I wasn't the starter there.
In this point in Randall's career, I don't think he would accept coming off the bench.
No.
I think he would on another team. I mean, like I don't know what you do for a living. But like if you at your job, I bet you would never want to accept like a demotion, say, but maybe you'd go somewhere else. If a company you felt like you had to prove yourself and maybe work your way back up.
I think it's the situation dependent, but I think once you've been treated like an all-star, you've seen how it is. You get that all-star money, you get that all-star time, you get those shots. I mean, you get because when you get the green light and it's taken away a little bit, because essentially that's what's happening. If he's the starter and he's getting to walk the ball up, push pace, does control the ball really, right? And then you say, well, you can't really do that right now, but we're going to put you on the bench. You can kind of control it in the select minute that you're out there when you are out there. I think having that type of conversation with the Randall who he is now, it's going to be a difficult one. I don't think it'll go as smoothly as, I'm on the Pelicans or I'm on the Celtics or I'm on the Nets. So I think I'm okay now. Go ahead.
He came off the bench for the Pelicans. You know what? Also in many ways, he gets the full Carmelo experience. You come to the Knicks, you're an all-star, fans love you. A half hour later, the fans want you off the team and are willing to do anything to get you off the team. And everyone's like, well, maybe you can come off the bench. And he says, not here, but elsewhere he'll come off the bench. And so eventually he'll be playing off the bench for the Trailblazers or whatever team Melo's on now.
Melo's not even signed to a team right now.
Oh, he's not even signed yet.
Yeah, we can touch on that really quickly. So do you guys want to see a Melo reunion? Because it's out there that he's met with Dolan. He had dinner with him like a few months ago. And apparently that sparked interest that he could potentially come back to New York for a reunion tour. How do you guys feel about Melo potentially coming back?
I would love to see a Melo reunion with Denver.
Jay, what about you?
Yeah, I don't see the point. Like everyone's biggest complaint is that the young guys don't get enough playing time. So you're going to add a 37-year-old to the roster who doesn't do anything different than what Randall does, like put up some inefficient offense with little defense. Like what would the point be other than to make a couple Melo fans like happy? Like
it's for highlight reels. It's for the Kemba welcome videos. It's like those type of things.
Yeah, that's what right. It's just selling some tickets.
That's really all it is.
Yeah. Like, I, if he wants to, like, at the end of his career, he wants to come back to the Knicks with those things where you're ceremonially on the team for like a day and then you retire right. As a Knick. That would be awesome. I'm so in for that. But him on the court what are we doing then? Like,
you stole more. You just all the discussion we just had about Obi, you just killed it completely if you sign Melo. Because what are you gonna do with Melo if and Obi are together on that team? You're gonna have to choose. And if you sign Melo not to play him, you just ride him on the bench. And I don't want to see Melo riding the bench for the whole season. What's the point?
Get that out. Then you have Cam Reddish getting no minutes, and we traded a first rounder for him. So either way, it doesn't make any sense.
Right. I mean, Melo at this point in his career, he could be a spot up 3-point shooter. He could do a few things. He's just he's just older at this point. He's pretty limited. Also, his draft class, the only person left in the league now is LeBron from his draft class.
Year 20. Oh, my goodness. Man. He's just signed a 2-year contract, too, with the Lakers today for like $97 million as well. So he's locked in with them for another 2 years as well.
Shouldn't Melo go to just retire, go to the big three and dominate that league? I would love to see Melo in the big three league, which might be a little below him, but
I think he still thinks he can play in the NBA. And I think as long as he believes that, he's going to likely try to get a spot until he doesn't believe it anymore.
Which is totally fair. Either way, I don't want that spot to be on the Knicks. I just don't see that direction where we're, I don't see the, as Jay said, it just, what's the point of that? If we were a terrible team and you're like, oh, the whole roster's terrible, we're not trying to win anyway, we'll have Melo there just as like for the fans. That's one thing. We're trying to get better now. We can't just give away playing time for like ceremonial purposes.
So you mentioned give away playing time. Danny Ainge from Utah wants to get 10? Was it 10 players that I read before? It was 3 Knick players that are currently on the roster and seven first round picks for one Donovan Mitchell.
So if I'm Danny Ainge, I think there's a deadline here. I don't care what I'm saying, what I'm pretending. I don't care if I'm like, well, I'll wait till the season goes. Donovan Mitchell doesn't even care if he leaves. I don't have to trade him. He has to be traded by opening night. And he has to be trading by opening night because of Webby Yama and the other 3 guys. Like, there's 3 guys who are supposed to be like NBA like superstars at the top of this draft. Danny Ainge came here to go to just tank this season. He wants to be in the top 3. And if you keep Donovan Mitchell, you are ruining your season because you want those top 3 picks.
So then are you in on Donovan Mitchell in terms of the Knicks trading for him? Is that something that you want to see?
Yeah, depending on the price. But what do you think? Do you think there's a chance that Danny Ainge actually keeps him before the season starts? Like, don't you think like his plan is to lose as many games as possible, and you keep Donovan Mitchell, you're screwed?
You can still lose as many games as possible with Donovan Mitchell. It's just about how much you want to play him. And if you do play him for the whole stretch, he has no help really around him. He has we don't even know how that roster is constructed. He can make a couple more moves before the season starts. I think Ainge is more than happy to sit down and be content with riding it out, because Donovan hasn't asked out. And until Donovan does, I think that he can ride it out because he's not pressured to make the move. He wants to get the most out of that trade. And until he does, I don't think he will make the move personally.
Don't you think every game that Donovan Mitchell plays for Utah, he's losing value? Not Donovan Mitchell losing value, but every game he plays, like, Donovan Mitchell's a very good player. You probably should win 30 games at the very least, no matter how bad the roster is, because you have Donovan Mitchell. Yeah. So every time he goes out there every night and they win a game, Danny Ainge is screwed. Because the whole purpose of this is you're getting all these draft picks. You want a centerpiece to your team. And your centerpiece is sitting there in the top 3 of the draft. Like, it's insane to bring Donovan Mitchell to the seat. Like, you're better off taking one or two less picks and getting in the top 3 of this draft.
Jay, what do you feel about the whole Donovan Mitchell situation? I know it's like the first time you've really addressed it on air. So what are your thoughts about Donovan Mitchell? Do you think he's a good fit with this Knicks team? And do you think the Knicks should trade for him?
I think he's a pretty good fit. I mean, he's young. He's an all-star. Still, now we're adding another subpar defender to this roster of subpar defenders. So maybe not the best fit, but he'd be the best guy on the roster. And anytime you can upgrade the roster, it's good. I do think 7 picks is ridiculous. I I also think they could get that down to maybe four if they wait to the beginning of the season, because I do agree with Mark, because you want Wembanyama, and Mitchell's good enough to get you some wins. And you could say play him less minutes, but there's not a coach in the league that's not going to play their best player 35 to 40 minutes. The coach will get fired before he does that. So he's going to be out there. He's going to be playing. And so I think this is a game of, you know, a staring contest right now, because they both know that the move has to happen. It's just neither one wants to budge at all, but it's going to have to happen. You also don't want to make that big trade for the Knicks side into the season either. You want to have some training camp, preseason. You don't want everything in disarray, you know, when you start the season. So I think both sides are going to be pressed to make a move. I just think it's probably going to happen right before training camp or right before preseason, because I think they're both going to try and make the other guy blink first.
You know, when you mentioned before, like if you trade for Donovan Mitchell, it makes sense because he'd be the best player on the team. You know, yeah. That was the exact same logic Isaiah Thomas had when he traded for Stephen Francis.
Well, yeah, but it was wrong because Francis was up at the time and Isaiah was.
That's literally like, I get Stevie franchise. I mean, how could you go wrong? The guy's gonna be the best player of the team. I got it. Like, literally his logic.
Yeah, but he was literally the only one who said that. He was completely washed up when he did. Everyone was like, what are you talking about? Like, the guy played, what, four games and then retired? Like, it was insane.
But it also, can we think of a similar scenario in the Knicks when they acquired a 25-year-old that was an all-star? And how did that go?
Yeah, but it depends what you're giving up.
True. We have a lot of picks.
Yeah, well, if they don't give up seven picks, then they'll still have some picks. When the Knicks traded Melo, they had no picks. They traded all their young assets, and they just had Melo and garbage. So if you trade for Mitchell and you still have Obi and you still have Barrett and, you know, Brunson, that's way more than Melo ever had.
Right. I guess if you have – you're assuming basically the Knicks will keep RJ. You're assuming they're going to obviously keep Brunson. And they'll have Mitch. Like, those three guys are given, and you add Donovan Mitchell. It's a lot more to build off of. We've just, in the way, if we give into Ainge right now, we're giving away two or three of our best young players. Plus, I mean, not counting RJ, but plus we're giving away all our ability to get cheap talent because we're giving away all these picks.
So it's also rumored as well that at least from The Athletic, from Shams, that the Wizards and Hornets are also close on the heels of trying to get Donovan Mitchell. But as we all know, the team that can give the Utah Jazz the best deal in terms of picks and players are the New York Knicks right now, without including, obviously, the Pelicans and or OKC. OKC is loaded with young talent, so they're not going to want to – I don't think they're going to want to shift anything right now. And in regards to New Orleans, I mean, they have CJ, so – I think that doesn't make sense anymore with Donovan. So really the Knicks are, I think, the best team right now for the Jazz to get value in terms of the best type of value. But if they do, I don't know. That's a good question.
What are you so
the Knicks like counter offer of, you know, four to five picks and one to two players is still better than what the other teams have to offer.
Right. I think you have to value the Knicks picks higher. Because just of our historical ability to just blow things, you want to, like, you assume, like, more can go wrong with the Knicks. These picks might be better. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't think Mitchell is a perfect fit in this team. On the other hand, adding a player of his talent, in theory, you could figure out how to make the team better from there. But it's going to be tough because you're also going to be capped salary-wise and not have draft picks. So it's going to be it's going to be hard to make the team really better also.
I think if you make the trade for Donovan, you have to be absolutely certain in the players that you're holding on to and keeping on. Because after that, I mean, this trade gets done, I think, if you include six picks. I think it's going to have to be that because Ainge wants to break the internet and say that he has the most picks. So you're going to give him that. I think he's going to have to accept the fact that they're not going to be unprotected. I know that's what everybody wants. They want the unprotected picks from the Knicks. That's the You know, that's the dessert, the cherry on top of the cake, right? That's great, right? That doesn't mean you're going to get them, okay? We got the best deal for you. We can give you two unprotected, you know, three unprotected at most, maybe. Give you three protected picks. We'll give you players that you want as well, too. But there has to be a ceiling at some point, right?
Yeah.
Right. And I guess if the Knicks are giving up two of their own first, the Dallas pick, whatever they have in protected picks, that seems like a reasonable offer for Donovan Mitchell.
Right, but you can't. But the thing is that the reasonable offer aspect has been broken because of the Wolves. When you trade six damn first rounders and a couple of role players for Rudy Gobert, you essentially can't define what trade is, and then you have KD asking out, and you can't. And nobody can even understand his value, and he's lowered his value because if you're gonna say basically, I don't know if I want to play with you anymore, and you have a couple of years left on your contract. No team doesn't want to bank on giving their valuable pick away because you might not even be there next year. So this entire like NBA trade system and contracts, the way it's set up right now is it's really hurt the value of what a player, like what you get for a player.
Yeah. No, my counter argument would be it's not our fault. Minnesota's stupid.
Right. Yeah. No, absolutely. That's true. That's
if anything, true. Anything, you should take less from us because they gave you so much. You don't need so much anymore. You got all the Minnesota's picks.
To call Danny Ainge. You have to call him.
If anything, you want to keep some of your young players. You almost want to give up more. And if you're going to try to win now with Donovan Mitchell, you'd want to keep more. Like you'd want to somehow keep more of the young players and give more in draft picks, I guess.
And I think that's fair given the amount of draft picks you have. Because to your point, we have all these picks. We're not going to draft everybody that we have. So are we going to utilize them? Because I thought that was the whole purpose of acquiring these assets, to get one of these quote-unquote disgruntled stars or stars on the market.
Yeah, I don't love this whole star-chasing thing that the Knicks are doing right now. But I guess this is what you're doing, Donovan Mitchell's a good star player to get. I just don't know what this really will lead to. Like, I don't know. If you add Donovan Mitchell to this team, let's say you add Donovan Mitchell to this team, you didn't move a single player, you just moved draft picks. How much better are we?
They're not a play-in team anymore. I would say they're definitely a playoff team. I'm not saying they're like third or fourth. They might be sixth, but they're not playing play-in is what I'm saying. If you add Donovan to the team right now. Now, what their ceiling is, I don't know. That's going to be up to how they gel really quickly. So, I have to see that. I don't know how a undersized backcourt with Jalen Brunson and Donovan Mitchell is going to look like with defensively. I know offensively they're going to be fun to watch, explosive probably. But I don't know what the defense is going to be like. So I need to see that team gel and how they play a first few games to kind of get an idea of how high they could go. But I would say if you add Donovan with the roster as it is right now and you just move picks, you're locked in more or less at six. I think you're definitely better than a lot of teams at that point.
Right. But do you want to trade? Are we trading all our draft picks to get out of the play-in tournament? Are we trading them to get to six? And you're right. It depends on how high the ceiling is. And the other issue is that when Mitchell gets here, Randall is even an even worse fit if you're going to have Mitchell here. The offense looks like you just want you want the ball to be moving, basically. And Randall doesn't move the ball, and the offense is – it's a very imperfect fit you have. And I guess you could figure it out later. I also feel like it's a weird thing the Knicks are doing in the sense that like we're totally all in on star chasing. Fine. But the two teams that were in the finals were teams that drafted players and kind of developed the team. It may make more sense to kind of do a little more drafting and a little more developing and see where you go as opposed to like getting rid of all your draft picks right now.
Yeah, you know, I think whatever they do, they're going to have to be locked in and committed to because they can't change it. And they're going to be locked in whatever that roster is because Mitchell has a couple of years in his contract left. And when you get him and you make that space, and then, you know, we're going to talk about maybe potentially extending RJ a little bit later, but you're going to likely have that roster constructed as is. To your point, if you do that, when you make that move, what is that roster going to look like? And what are your ceiling going to be? If it's going to be six, is it going to be three? And if you do that, how hamstrung are you to make future moves later on? Because that's essentially why you add Mitchell. Because even with Mitchell, to your guys' point, we're not a championship team. He's another piece. You need to add something to that. But I think he allows the Knicks to look more attractive than a Knicks team without Donovan. So
right. I heard like the philosophy that you get Mitchell here. He's a star and other stars will want to play with him. And you're like, well, the Knicks are capped out. It doesn't matter. Guys will just force their way here. I know people are saying that's the idea of guys will just force their way to places. But is that really happening? The only example of the players forcing their way certain places, really, it's James Harden. And that's been an epic disaster for every team he's gone to. Well, it was an epic disaster for the Nets. It hasn't worked out very well for Philly so far. And they're paying him more money now this year season where they're like, I guess we have to pay him because we got him. But like, there aren't that many guys actually forcing their way to other teams. This trend is not like it's one player who really did it.
Well, they force their way out, but they don't really get to force their way to where they want to go.
It hasn't been like, it's not like we're like a guy forces his way to another team and that team goes to the finals. It's not really happening.
Mm-hmm.
Did Kawhi force his way out of San Antonio?
He did force his way out of San Antonio.
And did he go to the Raptors and he did go to the finals and won. I mean,
but he wasn't
forced. But that's an anomaly though. Cause like, if you take that out, I mean, there's not a lot of evidence to say that, hey, if a star player wants to force his way out, and if that player even does force his way out, sometimes it may not lead to a winning situation. There's not a lot of evidence to state that it does happen. You might win more games, but if the objective is to win a championship, there's not a lot of evidence stating that if you move, that happens. So I agree with you on your point though.
Yeah, the Kawhi situation was also really weird. He had some like mysterious injury for an entire year. San Antonio, the team were like, no one's on the out with the outs for San Antonio. Like they're like the most well-run organization in the NBA. So it was just really strange. And Detroit, I mean, Toronto had to trade an all-star, their best player for him. It worked out really well for Toronto. That's and he didn't force his way to Toronto. He just forced his way out of San Antonio. He didn't get to really choose his location.
And Toronto right. also had like five guys make giant leaps that were pretty unexpected. So it was just like this perfect storm.
Right, Siakam came out of nowhere. Like, where the hell was he laying on the bench? And then out of nowhere starts and goes crazy. And now he's played himself into another huge contract. That's amazing. I think it's the Donovan Mitchell situation is going to be fun to watch. I think it doesn't. I think it definitely doesn't go into to the season. I don't think that happens. I think a move has to happen before then. Because I think both teams don't want it to happen that way. Now, I don't think if there's no deal that's acceptable to Ainge, I think he'll break at some point. He has to know he has to break because there's only so much he's going to get. But if he's very committed and he doesn't want to move, that's the only way I can see Donovan potentially staying. But it benefits all parties for him to be moved before the season starts.
So. I think Ainge knows he's got to move him, and I think he'll lower the price. I think Jay is right. It's a staring contest, game of chicken. He will lower his price. It's just a matter of, does he take the Knicks offer? Does he take Charlotte's offer? I was going to say OKC could obviously jump in there, but they probably, with this draft coming up, they probably will want one more season of terribleness before they try to start winning.
Yeah.
Maybe like there are a bunch of teams out there who would make a lot of sense to try to get in on this. Obviously, Mitchell's a really good player. The Wizards, what are you doing? You got Beal. You got KP. Why not try to get Donovan? If you're Portland, you're keeping Dame. Maybe you could try to figure out how Donovan would fit there. Any team who's like kind of locked into their situation or kind of like, we have a couple players, we don't know where we're going, like Charlotte, let's just try to get Donovan Mitchell and see how it goes.
The thing is, it doesn't matter who tries to get Donovan. Those unprotected picks that he wants, none of them look better than the Knicks. None of them.
Agreed.
So that's why I think it's inevitable that a deal does happen. And if it does happen, I think for both parties, the best team is for the Knicks, because obviously Donovan has connections here and Ainge gets the best deal in terms of picks and players from the Knicks. So again, I think it all makes sense. But I said this in my last episode. Sometimes when things look like they make sense and it all looks and feels right, it almost never happens or falls completely apart. So, we're Knicks fans, right? So we've seen this story so many times before and seen what happened afterwards, right? So, I mean, this is nothing new to us. What is kind of new, though, just a little bit new, is talking about extending the players that we draft. Because those are stories that we don't really have a lot to talk about. But really now, we have a budding all-star, if you will, in RJ Barrett. Some fans call him Star J. Like that name, actually. So his extension is coming up, and you know, he's eligible for $185 million over 5 year max extension. Now, I don't know if the Knicks are going to, I'm actually sure the Knicks are not going to offer that. I think, and they actually polled The Athletic, a couple of NBA front offices. I think it was about 16 NBA front offices they polled. And out of every single one, none of them agreed to give Barrett the max. I think the number that they were comfortable giving Barrett was a clean $100 million over 4 years, which actually is not a, a bad deal. Now, in my opinion, I don't think he takes that deal. I think he does a Brandon Ingram. And if they give him anything less than the max, I think he plays for that contract going into this season. I think that's, I think he has too much confidence and believes in himself way too much to accept anything less. And when you see Zion and Ja, two other people in your draft class, get extended to max contracts, I think that also puts a little bit of a chip on your shoulder to want to see that too. So I think just all of those factors combined, I think that's, I think that's what he's looking for. What do you guys think with RJ? Do you think the Knicks extend him to a max? And if not, do you, does he accept the max, or does he bank on himself and try to get a max?
I think there's 0% chance they'll offer a max. He hasn't played well enough to be offered a max. You'd have to be crazy.
Right.
If the Knicks offer him 4 years, $100 million, if the scenario is either he accepts a $100 million four-year deal or he goes back and plays this season to earn the max, that scenario, that either one sounds great to me. Either the Knicks get him at a reasonable contract, or he's like, I have a chip on my shoulder, I'm going to earn the max. If he earns the max, wow, that'd be wonderful. Anything he gets, if he plays well enough to earn more than a $100 million four-year deal this year, that's great for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Jay, what about you, man? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like maybe it's just because of what's happened the last 20 years. I feel like the Knicks might just offer him the max and without him like really earning it yet. And just because they don't want to deal with it next season. And then, of course, be capped out and then not be able to get like make a move that they want to because they're capped out.
Right.
I think people say we're negative, but we're right like a lot.
I think they're going to be capped out no matter what. I think the way it's set up now is that all the RJ money is over the cap. They're already stuck with the cap, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're moving Randall, getting out from his contract, I think the Knicks basically are at the cap. And it's just a matter of like finding ways to move guys with like the cap jujitsu, or signing guys you already have for a lot more money. The only way the cap system is so weird, but you're capped out unless you want to really sign your own players. If you sign your own players, you're allowed to go like to $180 trillion.
Yeah.
But that's also really like incentivizes to develop your own players. RJ, it won't really matter that much how much they pay him as far as the cap, because it'll be over either way.
Yeah.
But I'd like him to earn a bigger contract. He has a lot of his game. Like, he's shown that he has great work ethic. He's getting better every season. The big thing, though, this year, he's got to get more efficient. He cannot be, first of all, you cannot have Randall and RJ both be high volume, low efficiency. That's just recipe for losing.
Right.
I think if you have more RJ with OB, there's a better chance the RJ would be more efficient because you'd have a running offense. You'd have more opportunities to score, easier situations. I really hate how RJ is. The RJ I hate is the RJ that's like, there are three guys under the basket. I'm just going to attack them with no shot of scoring.
Yeah.
Like, he just attacks situations that are just like, the shot wasn't there. Like, pass out, don't attack that. And part of the situation is that you let the defense just get set up and they know what you're doing. It's not that helpful.
I think RJ Barrett's going to look way different this year because this is the first time legitimately he has a point guard. And I think that makes a big, big, big difference. If in his entire career, the best point guard you can make the argument that he's had is Elfrid Payton.
I mean, you can say the same thing about Julius Randle and anyone that's been on the roster. In theory, so if the Knicks get Donovan Mitchell, hey, whatever, they're going to give up too much in my mind. No matter what they give up, I'll probably think it's too much. If they get Donovan Mitchell, it'll be super fun, and I'll see how it goes. If they don't get Donovan Mitchell, I'm okay with that also, because I don't think he's the key to getting us to the promised land. He could be. I don't know. But I think we might be overhyping him a little bit also. It'd be great to get him. But I think we have an interesting team right now either way, and I'm really interested in how this team plays with Brunson and the other guys, and guys just developing.
So then if so to go back to the question then with RJ Barrett, if he's not offered a max, do you think he takes it?
I don't think he'll take 4 years, $100 million. If you're saying if 4 years, 120, maybe. It's hard to turn down a giant deal. It's really hard to deal that.
So you think there is a situation where he will accept something not max?
In between, yes, absolutely. Jay?
Yeah, I agree. I think 120 probably gets it done. 100 doesn't.
Got you on that.
Troy, you don't think he'll accept anything below, like any below max?
I think when you look at his draft class and you see, and I'm not saying he thinks he's those players, but at this, it's nonetheless, when he's always compared with those players. It's always going to be that way, right? And it's unfortunate because he has Zion, he came in as a generational talent. Ja Morant, who you didn't really know. You knew he was going to be good, but you didn't know how good. And now he's basically become, in 2 years, an all-star. Like a leading guard star, like a franchise guard. He's become a franchise guard.
He's the most exciting young player in the NBA.
Right.
Right.
When you see those two players and you see a player like Zion, for whatever you want to say about Zion and what all the, you know, qualifiers in his contract for getting the max, at the end of the day, a guy who showed a little bit of success, didn't really play a lot because of his weight issues and stuff like that, still got a max contract. I think RJ seeing that and thinking to himself, I played nearly every game. I've gotten better each year. I think it makes sense that I'm going to likely get better this year. I'm bigger this year. I think with all those factors together, I think he will go the Ingram route and say, you're not going to give me the max. Okay, I'm going to go out and earn that max, and you're going to give it to me after. Just because of the player he is. He has too much confidence in himself not to think he can't get that.
I have a question for you guys. I know Jay is not a big gambler. Troy, I don't know if you're a big gambler or not. But let's just say I told you had to bet $1,000 on this. For me, betting $1,000, if I really had to bet $1,000, I would not be happy. That'd be very stressful. Here's what you have to bet $1,000 on. Who plays more games in the NBA next season? Zion or Ben Simmons?
Oh, wow.
Zion Williamson.
I don't know. Jay?
Allegedly, Zion is healthy. Ben Simmons, we have absolutely no idea.
Ben Simmons has a mental block, and Zion has a Big Mac block.
He does look like he has slimmed down a little bit, though.
Zion?
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
So I'm going to guess Zion plays 45 games.
And Ben plays 44, 0, or 70 games. If Ben decides to play, he should be there for most of the games. He's pretty durable.
The problem is so it's a good way to kind of segue into the Nets. What's going on in Brooklyn? Because that's how you answer that question. He is a Brooklyn Nets still, right? That is still the team he's on, right?
The best about trading for this guy who doesn't want to play is that they also cock-blocked themselves from making an Ayton trade and and an Ingram trade, and like anybody they would get for basically Durant, they can't now because of the rookie max contract rule. Right. You have one on the team, and so Durant
you can only trade for one.
Like, no, you can't have more than one on your roster.
No, that's not true. No, because you could have if the Knicks gave RJ a rookie max, and just say IQ earned a rookie max, you could give IQ one also. You can have two in the same team if they're your own players. You can't trade
players, but they traded for Simmons, so now they can't trade for an Ingram or
that's what I'm saying. You can't trade for two of them, basically.
Right. That's a really funny question that you bring up. I really don't. Ben Simmons is such a question mark because legitimately, if he plays, he'll probably play most of the games. He doesn't have a reason not to. He's been out for two seasons. What else? He had a lot of rest. I heard he had back issues and mental issues. I mean, I don't even know what's going on. I don't even know his health issues. That's the thing. Is he even healthy? Is his back okay? Is his foot okay? I don't even know. I have never seen a workout. I haven't seen a shot. I've seen nothing from Ben Simmons' camp to tell me if he's even ready to play. So I don't even know if he's going to play. And I don't even know what's happening in Brooklyn at this point to even answer who's he's going to play with.
To answer the question, I go Zion, but I don't feel good about it at all.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, if you had to bet real money on that, you'd be like, oh, God.
I'd be so starts. It would probably be like 60 games into the season. Nobody's played a game yet.
Oh my god!
It's like game 82. You're like one of them's playing tonight. I just don't know who it'll be. So
and then they both play, and you get no money.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're the Nets, also like Joe Tsai, whatever, and like and Sean Marks. I mean, do they pretend to Kevin Durant they're really trying to trade him? Kevin's like, oh yeah, we'll work on a trade. Oh, I was just on the phone. I couldn't figure out a trade. And Kevin Durant's like, there was no dial tone. You're lying. Yeah, we never made any phone calls.
It's a WhatsApp call. It's a WhatsApp deal.
Yeah, like it's clearly you're like, Kevin, we traded you to the Nets. could you play for us? Like, if the Nets, you're like, I think the Nets have the trump card in this. Because, I mean, the Nets could do two things. They could try to trade him they can get Jaylen Brown. And if you trade Durant for Jaylen Brown, it's not terrible. Like, you still have a very good team. You got Kyrie. I mean, you have Kyrie, you have Ben Simmons and Jaylen Brown. Like, I'd go to battle with those guys. It's just that you hate the fact that you turned Durant into Jaylen Brown. But you could also say, hey, Durant, and I think I've said this on our show, hey, Durant, here's our offer. Play for us or just don't play in the NBA at age 34. Just give up the season. Do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And you can't.
Here's my advice. Don't sign a four-year contract if you don't plan on honoring it. So I'll see you in September.
I've heard other people say something like that whatever, guys can force it out throughout whenever they want. I'm favorite player rights and whatever. I'm a very liberal person. I believe in like unions. I believe in like the workers' rights and so forth. I think what Kevin Durant doing is goddamn insane. He's breaking the NBA when it comes to contracts. Yeah. I think it is. What Jay just said. Don't sign a four-year deal if you don't want to play for this goddamn team. It's one thing to want out and ask out with 1 year to go. What he's doing, Durant's doing, is just horrendous for the league.
Why even have contracts? Just make it a free-for-all.
Yeah, he's going to break contracts, basically. The next union player, we're going to have a lockout next time because the owner's going to be like, if you guys aren't going to respect contracts, we can't have a league. Like, we're going to be like the Kevin Durant lockout where the players have to agree to some kind of like major concession to make this work because Kevin Durant broke the league.
And here's the thing with Kevin Durant, right? When he's requesting a trade, basically holding the Nets hostage in this situation, because there's reports that when he met with Nets management, he said, if you fire the GM and you fire, Steve Nash, I'm good with that. It's like, think about the demands he's making. Yeah. Like, these are like boss. That's an organizational impactful move. Like, you're talking about like you're a president or at least like co-GM, or you're none of those things. You're a player. You're one of the best players in the game, sure, but you're a player. You have 4 years left on your deal, and you and Kyrie Irving, your best friend, just opts into the contract, right? And then after that, instead of trying to see where it goes with a Ben Simmons and seeing what you can get out of the roster that's not played yet, that you've not even tested out yet, rather than saying, yeah, you know what, I'm done. Just move
right.
me. And move me, and not only move me to anywhere, right? Don't move me anywhere. Move me to these teams, Miami, Phoenix. You know what? I might take the Raptors because, of course, you guys will get Scottie Barnes because they'll give you Scottie Barnes because he's not a great player or anything.
Yeah, I mean, but first of all, if Toronto offers Scottie Barnes, the Nets should like not hesitate to say yes.
Never. He's one of the best young players in the game today. It's amazing to watch. Amazing.
Yeah, it is so insane the situation Durant, and like he's like fire the coach, and they're like the coach. He's like, well, yeah, he's not a good coach. You got us to hire this coach. You had us fire Kenny Atkinson so we could hire Steve Nash, and now you don't like him. How about you just stop bitching and play the goddamn game?
I do want them to trade him, though, because I feel like on paper, this Nets team looks really, really good. And
they're dangerous.
Yeah, I'm kind of scared that they're actually like super good. So I want Durant to blow this up.
Oh, I'm dying for them to trade him because I'm so happy that this is the Nets. Like, I am a petty person, I guess, because I enjoy Nets misery. But like,
I'm petty too, man.
The fact that like they won New York, and what that meant was winning one playoff team and being in the laughingstock of the NBA. That's great. Way to win New York, Nets.
Yeah, after those billboards and all that trash they talked, I think we all earned a right to be pretty petty.
Yeah,
and I'm very happy to be petty. Actually, I drank my petty Kool-Aid this morning. I had drank my petty water today. I feel very, very happy being petty to that fucking Nets team, because at the end of the day, they destroyed the Knicks when they came to the team. Durant, with all of his, you know, great speech about, oh, the Knicks are boring, they're not a great place to play, the Mecca is the Mecca, but the Knicks are, nobody wants to play for the Knicks anymore. They're like, oh yeah, well, I guess nobody wants to play for the Nets anymore, because you want to leave, don't you?
It's so crazy. Also, his foot was 6 inches back. foot 6 inches, 3 inches, whatever the inches were. Yeah, they probably win the title, and they have parades, and they're talking about how, like, what an amazing coup for the Nets and everything else. Instead, basically, Patrick, it's almost like a laughing stock.
So now they have their own finger roll.
Ah, yes. There you go. That's going to be the moment talked about forever, especially till they get a championship. That's going to be the moment spoken about forever. But here's a question. If Durant doesn't move, because there's been talks about if he'll play, will he play with the same intensity? Does KD have it in him when he's on the court to not ball out to the full extent of his ability? Do you think that he would be somebody like maybe how a James Harden did, will not come into camp in shape, maybe not play extremely well every game? Is he that type of player? Or do you think if he doesn't move, he'll still be the same KD we saw last year?
It takes a very special asshole to bring the James Harden effort. I think if Durant shows up, he's going to try to win. I also think it's just his age and where he is with his career. He wants, like, he will, if he comes back to the Nets, he's going to try to win a title with the Nets. I can only see him trying to, I guess the scenario would be like him trying to force a trade mid-season. And while he'll still be trying hard, it'll be terrible for team chemistry.
Yeah, there's not many Hardens out there. I can't see him. Also, he's at the tail end of his career. I don't think he's going to do that. I can see them being the number one seed by like six games right before the trade deadline and him still asking for a trade just because he's weird.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think they could be number one with maybe no losses. Yeah. And because of the type of guy KD is, he'll still try to request a trade out because it's about him. He wants to hoop in a situation that is comfortable to him. And if he doesn't feel comfortable, that's what's going to happen. I want to close out today's show with one last topic because it's funny. I think I laughed a lot when I listened to the last show with Jay. Jay, you had mentioned on your last show that you did that the Knicks fans, they clamor for Cam Reddish as if he's already an established all-star on the bench that has basically proven that he deserves all the minutes and that nobody else does, really, right? That's kind of what the Knicks fans clamor for. Yeah. So he's, as of right now, he still doesn't have a spot on this team. I think you can make the argument that his placement on the team is the same exact way it was last year. I can't see him getting any minutes now. What do you think about Cam Reddish currently? Does he have a spot in this Knicks team, or is he going to get moved?
I think he's RJ's backup, but that's like 15 minutes a game at best. So, yeah, that's his spot. He comes off the bench and he barely plays.
I mean, the Maybe guys will be
injured guys, insurance.
Yeah, guys will be injured. He, what also has Cam Reddish earned at this point? He hasn't earned. All he has earned is a shot. Tibbs will give him a shot. If he looks good, he'll play more. If he doesn't look good, he'll play less. He's got to play defense. Tibbs won't put him out there unless he play defense. Maybe having, and I know Randall's going to get, like, he gives different treatment to different players. But if you get the Tibbs young player treatment, maybe that's better for Cam generally. Maybe his minutes are limited at first because he's not basically giving the full effort on defense. But maybe he ends up looking better by the end of the season because he's getting this. I don't know how he fits in. I don't think he's a lot of trade value now either. So I think you're kind of like, just see how it goes.
I think as long as Fournier is starting, he's always going to struggle for any realistic minutes where you can kind of see what he can do in a game. Because the minutes that he plays are so few and far in between, it's kind of hard to get a look at what he can do with the team, like how he can run with the team. Because even when he plays, it's so little. They have to find a way to make more minutes for him or trade him. And I think the way you do that is by moving on from Evan Fournier. And if you do that and you don't make the Donovan move, I think that's an easy way to get Grimes to start. And then you'd have Cam Reddish off the bench to play that position.
So the Knicks have a lot of players that like could earn more minutes, and we'll see how it goes. Are we sure Fournier is start? First of all, he's the move Fournier. Are we sure he's starting? Because yeah. I don't know if Tibbs is, I mean, you're assuming it, but like this lineup looks terrible from on defense. Are you really going to put Jalen out there with RJ and Fournier? Like, if anything, maybe Tibbs like goes, hey, I can't coach based on contracts. I need to put Fournier off the bench because that just makes more sense for our offense.
I hope
Nick 3-point shot leader on the bench.
Yeah, I don't think that's such an amazing accomplishment. I mean, like, it's good. He's a good 3-point shooter, but I feel like you might say, like, hey, I need some more defense in the starting lineup. Like, it's also like if we put a like Tibbs last year kept putting out the starting unit over and over again, no matter how bad it looked. He's gonna do the same thing? Like the starting unit's gonna go out there and look like crap, and he's gonna be like, can't make any changes, it's in stone.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he has an 8-man rotation, or excuse me, 10-man rotation pretty locked, right? And I think that's why a lot of it really does go to Coach Tibbs, because if he does move away from that 10-man and allows a little bit more, you know, other players to kind of jump in depending on matchup, because again, it should depend on matchup, then, you know, I think that might work. You might see more Reddish, and I think that's a way to increase his value. So potentially you could, I don't think they're going to move him before the season unless it's a potentially for Donovan Mitchell, if he's included in that. But if it's not, I think he'll probably stay with them. They'll try to increase his value and maybe try to move him toward a trade deadline if possible. But Cam Reddish is I don't know enough about him, but I think he's earned a shot. I mean, you gave a first round up for him. I think you have to at least give it one season underneath the Knicks and see what you get from him. But again, you're going to have to give him minutes. If you're not going to give him minutes and you're going to ride him on the bench, then yeah, you're going to have to move him because it doesn't make sense. And the only way that makes sense is if Fournier leaves. You have to move on from Fournier. So
first of all, I cannot even imagine Leon and Danny Ainge are on the phone right now, and Leon's like, no, not for Cam. I cannot throw Cam in. That's it. I can't do that. We're sorry. I'm going to have to hang up. I'm sorry. I'm sorry,
Danny.
People
on Twitter who are saying that, though.
That would be insane.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The Twitterverse for the Knicks is on a... It's on a different scale. You guys, I mean, we all explore the Twitterverse from day to day. I think we kind of understand the stuff that goes on there. There are people on there that still believe the Andrea Bargnani trade was one of the best trades that we've ever made. Just putting that out there.
It's weird. Like,
Jared, you make fun of Tommy D.
You hear the stuff about QAnon, and you see people like the crazy thing people write online. You're like, these people are nuts. Anyway. So they say that Frank Ntilikina, if given the minutes, he would have won the MVP. You go to Knicks Twitter and you can understand how QAnon develops also.
I think if you abandon Knicks Twitter and you just look at the team as constructed, I think you'll clearly see who we believe the starters to be currently constructed. I think the only position, to your point, that's movable right now, everybody the way it is that 3 spot with either Evan, or if RJ takes it and you're calling Evan the 2 guard, then, you know, it's really Grimes, really. That's the only spot that I see really that could change, because you need to add defense to that lineup. I agree. And right. Fournier is not a stronger defender at this point than Grimes is. And I'm not saying Grimes is a better 3-point shooter than Evan is, but his shot isn't bad. And can he, you know, can he evolve into a pretty decent 3-point shooter? I think so.
Yeah. So, I mean, you don't need everyone else out there. You have to, like, you also need offense on your second unit. I think there'll be some changes. Tibbs is going to have to play with this to figure out what the best lineup is. I don't think the lineup on the first game of the season is going to, we're going to see. I mean, I think there'll be some changes going forward. But I also feel like what you said, a point about Cam, in theory, it's great to open up minute. Like, you're like, well, this trade Evan Fournier, we had to trade a boatload of picks to move Kemba. And I know Fournier is a much better player, but it's not that easy to move these guys. And like, we can't open up minutes for Obi by moving Randall. And this is not the same situation with Grimes and I'm sorry, with Cam and Fournier, but it's not that easy to move these guys. Just saying we have to move those guys doesn't mean it's going to actually happen.
Right.
Cam, you know what, right now, Cam will get 15 minutes a night, maybe 20. He's got to earn more minutes. I'm fine with that. And I understand we trade a first round pick to get him, But we've also now we are trying to switch gears and try to win more games next year. So you can't just give up minutes when you're trying to like, it's not, you can't just give up minutes for pure player development when you're trying to win games.
Right. No, that's a good point. And Jay, we'll close it out with you. Just regards, just one last note on Cam Reddish. You've stated that he gets about maybe 15 at RJ's backup. Do you see any type of other consistent minutes going forward with him, depending on matchup? Or do you think unless a move is made to move a player, that's where he's going to stick at?
I think it's going to be really tough to get minutes for him because with the 10-man lineup, you still have no minutes for Rose, McBride, and Sims. So, like, there's not a lot of minutes to go around. If you play Cam more, you're taking away from either Obi or Grimes, I guess. So I really, unless they clear up some spots, I don't see him getting a lot of minutes. I just don't think there's a lot of room there, unless there's an injury. I hope there's not, but I honestly, those are the only two situations I see.
I have a question for you. I know you said you're going to end, but how do you see IQ fitting in? Not that like IQ will get minutes. I think most likely he'll be paired up with Derrick Rose. I'm assuming Rose is still here on the second unit. But what do you see happening with IQ's game? Like, I feel like he's also become a polarizing player. I mean, I think all Knicks fans are like in favor of him. But I think some people think he's pretty good and maybe a good like microwave scorer off the bench and a guy that could develop. And some people think he's already Donovan Mitchell. The Knicks Twitterverse is weird. What do you think is going to happen with IQ?
IQ's a great player. He showed that at the end of the season more than he did in the beginning of the season because he did terribly in a lot of games. And people were saying, like, you know, he didn't give IQ the minutes. No. IQ more than actually any other rookie last year, or whoever you want to call
second
a rookie,
year, second year
player, got a lot of actual burn time. It's just that he didn't really make a lot of meaningful impact with the time that he had. And it wasn't until we were, you know, basically at that point not really caring if we won or lost games, where IQ kind of stepped up and, you know, had the triple-double, was scoring, you know, a little bit more effortlessly. Obi had the same thing, too, where he was showing a lot more development toward the end of the season, more than he did in the beginning of the season. Now, you could put that down to experience, playing more, whatever the case may be, but that's what we saw in flashes. IQ today, how does IQ look today? I saw his Brunson, you know, basketball workout. He's cut the hell up. He's cut up. He looks like he put on a lot of muscle. Does that now a lot of his issues last season when he was driving was that he flicked up the ball a lot or expected contact and would throw the ball up without getting contact. And I think a lot of times he did that because he knew if he absorbed it, he wouldn't be able to complete the shot because he just wasn't strong enough. I think this season he's obviously added muscle. Now, is that added weight going to affect him and help him, you know, finish at the basket better? I think it's a possibility. Now, will he? Again, I don't know. He's only played against these workout, you know, professional players. So I can only take that as an example and say, well, he definitely looks good there, but, you know, Ben Simmons looks good there. So I can't really take that for everything. I need to see it in game. But if last season was any indication, I expect a jump from IQ this season. I expect him to be better, but I expect him more than anything else to be more consistent.
Consistent would be awesome. The things that drove me crazy about him were when he just chucks up like three pointers, like he's Steph Curry, especially like early in the shot clock. And then like his inability to like the too many floaters, too many, like he needs a jump. He needs a pull up jump shot. He needs to be able to get to the rim. And if he's stronger, maybe that solves it. He seems like a guy that's going to keep getting better. So I'm hoping this year he makes another leap. Guys make leaps. It can make a huge difference on this team.
Jay, what do you feel about IQ?
I feel pretty good about him. I feel like that's probably going to be one of Utah's sticking points for a trade.
Yeah.
But if he stays around, I think he can be a legit six-man contender. He could put up a lot of buckets. He could still play point guard better than Peyton did. So there's a lot of roles for him to play on the team if he's around.
I'm also comfortable trading him if we're getting Mitchell. I don't want to trade him, but of the guys, I'd rather move him than move Obi and Grimes, even though you might have to move two of those guys anyway.
Well, if you go by Knicks Twitter, if we just move Evan Fournier and four protected picks, that should be enough to get the deal done. So if that deal is on the table, I'll be happy to take it. But if we're talking realistic, and that's what we should be talking about here, then you're realistically losing either Obi, Grimes, or IQ. One of them is...
No, I'm just wondering if we're moving two of them is my real question.
Right, right. Potentially, you might have to move them, or you could potentially have, if it's IQ, maybe you have IQ Cam and a couple of other picks as well, too. Again, I don't know if that gets it done. That's up to Utah and I guess the next best deal on the table, which I'm sure Leon's probably trying to figure what that deal is so he can beat it. So that way we would be the best deal on the table and then they'd have to take it regardless. And I think that's kind of what's happening here. I think it's kind of trying to understand, OK, what's the best deal you've got? OK, that's what it is. All right. Here's what I'm going to give you. Nobody's going to be able to match that. It's not what you want, but it's the best you're going to get. And I think at that point, he's going to have to make a decision.
If they do keep Cam and they do the Mitchell trade, the good news for people who like Cam is that likely Fournier would have to be in that trade to get Mitchell to match the money. So that those minutes would open up for Cam. It would most likely be for the veterans, but most likely would be Fournier and Derrick Rose to match the money.
Right. All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of the Knicks Recap. Mark and Jay, it was a pleasure talking Knicks with you guys. I love speaking, so much about basketball with you guys, especially guys who not only love but know the game. And I have to mention it again, if you didn't hear in the beginning of the show, 10 plus years, a decade and going on still. One of the longest running Knicks podcast ever. I hope one day the Knicks Recap can also claim that same fame. If you're not following the New York Knicks podcast, you should be doing that. They're on Twitter, they're on Instagram, they're on Facebook. Check out the Brink of Sanity podcast that they have, as well as the New York Knicks podcast they have. You'll be able to catch this on all streaming services. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow us. Until next time, Knicks fans, keep it going.
Bye, bye, love. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
It's all over.
Goodbye.
It's time to go.
This is the end.
Say goodbye.